I encourage people to really focus on your peer network even more than the mentorship, because the peers are the people who are going to ride with you the whole journey. And having strong peer relationships, you know, employers are going to ask about you. They're going to say to your peers, hey, what is this person like to work with? And those are the people who are going to know the opportunities for you.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I'm very excited for our guest, Ron Klain. Ron, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Well, Ron, you have an incredibly impressive career. I'll just do the highlights real quick. Currently, you're the chief legal officer at Airbnb, I think for the last year or so. But beforehand, you served as the White House chief of staff under President Joe Biden. And then earlier, a lot of, you know, incredible things in DC, but part of it, chief of staff of Biden when he was the VP, and also Al Gore when he was the VP. He graduated from Harvard. Incredible career. Thank you for joining me today. Maybe that's a kind of like place to start, a little bit of, you know, how do you get to be the, you know, the chief of staff of the president, and how does, you know, the transition to the enterprise and business world in a nutshell? But maybe we start there.
Let's start there. So thanks for having me. Look, I've been lucky to have a career that where I've spent about half my time in government service, about half the time in the private sector. In government service, I started off as a law clerk to Justice White on the Supreme Court. I worked on Capitol Hill for now Senator Ed Markey and for the Democrats when they were in the minority in the Senate. I worked in the Clinton administration in the White House counsel's office as chief of staff also to the Attorney General and as chief of staff to Vice President Gore. And then later in the Obama administration as chief of staff to Vice President Biden, and later on as the Ebola response coordinator during the West African Ebola outbreak in 2014 and 2015. Then came back to the Biden White House as chief of staff in 2021 and 2022 and into early 2023. And during the private sector, I've been a lawyer. I've been a partner at the law firm of Melvin & Myers. I spent almost 10 years as the general counsel at an investment firm in Washington, D.C. called Revolution that was founded by Steve Case, the former founder and CEO of AOL. And since late 2023, I've been the chief legal officer, general counsel at Airbnb. So I've had, again, public and private experience. I've enjoyed being in both. I think I try to bring the insights from one to the other and vice versa. And I love my job at Airbnb. I think it's a fascinating company. We're doing great things around the world. It's great to be part of it.
That's incredible. Well, you know, I'll be remiss if not obviously jumping right into the most interesting part for me, and I'm sure for all the listeners, going back into the private sector. Obviously, Airbnb, there's no one in the world that doesn't know what that company does. Still growing fast, I believe, and like you said, doing amazing things. When you compare private sector, especially tech sector that is fast growing, I think a lot of people, they think government, they think slow, they think complicated. I don't think that's always true though. When you think about managing operations and sort of like truly sort of like setting strategy and execution, what are the obvious things that are actually the same?
Yeah.
And what are the places where you think it's different?
So some things are similar, some things are very different. Obviously, in the government, we're dealing with often with life and death questions or questions of war and peace, and we have less of that at Airbnb, fortunately. But they're both global. At Airbnb, we're in 220 countries and regions around the world, and there isn't a part of the world where we aren't. And so it has the same kind of global scope. As the chief legal officer, I have lawyers working for me all over the world, so I can get a call any time, day or night, about a situation. And both involve a lot of crisis management. Recently, we had a big crisis where we were trying to respond to the LA fires. We housed 25,000 people who were displaced by the fires in Los Angeles. So we had to move very quickly to make housing available, to figure out how to work with local nonprofits, to find the people who had been displaced and get them into our housing. And then we worked with the Attorney General of California to make sure that our hosts in the LA area who are still hosting guests with a fee were doing so without raising prices unnecessarily. We put in place new price gouging protections in the LA area, and we housed 25,000 people free of charge through our nonprofit Airbnb.org. So A lot of crisis response, same kind of thing we used to see in the government where, you know, we deploy FEMA, we do kind of emergency response. We do a lot of that Airbnb too. And then I'd say there's another thing that's in common. When I worked in the Biden administration, we spent months in delicate diplomacy trying to get Japan and Korea, our two allies in Northern Asia, reconciled. There have been historical tensions between Japan and Korea. They're both democracies in Northern Asia, but there have been a lot of historical conflict between the two countries. We spent a lot of time with the president, meeting with the prime minister of Japan, the prime minister of Korea, trying to bring them together, and having a summit of both countries at the White House, trying to make these two countries that are both important to the United States be closer to one another. And we worked on a lot of that at the White House. And at Airbnb, every day we send thousands of Koreans to stay in Japanese homes, thousands of Japanese people to stay in Korean homes. In the long run, I think building that kind of human connection, human understanding is important for better relations around the world. And that's what we do at Airbnb, and I'm proud to be part of that.
That's incredible. And also interesting, you know, as you've been on one side of it, and the top governments trying to work together, but then really the people sometimes, they love travel, they want to do that, so be able to connect that. You know, I think there's a really good point about the LA fires. I don't think most people understand how enterprises play a role a lot of times in social needs and in general, like are being more than just a part of the economy or part of the social fabric. And have you seen that?
In Airbnb, we consider ourselves part of the civic infrastructure.
Yeah.
So obviously in most extreme events like the fires in Los Angeles or the hurricanes we had last year in the eastern United States, where we housed thousands of people in North Carolina, Tennessee, who had been displaced, you know, we provide surge housing. We're available housing for emergencies. But also, it's not just disasters. It's also for happy events. During the Eras Tour, when Taylor Swift would come to a town, thousands of people would flood in. And a lot of places where she played didn't have enough hotel rooms. So we provided the housing capacity to allow cities to host the Eras Tour and to allow guests to come and stay there, because people would rent out extra bedrooms in their homes, make a little extra money. A tight economy was a good way for people to make a little extra money, rent out a bedroom to a Taylor Swift fan, and allow those fans to come see her concerts. And for big events, for the Paris Olympics, we hosted over 500,000 guests for the Paris Olympics. Otherwise, Paris would have had to build a ton of new hotels necessary, would have taken up space needed for housing. So allowing people to convert their housing to temporary accommodations for out-of-towners, it's part of the infrastructure that the city needs in this day and age to host conferences and concerts and sporting events and things like that. So I do think at Airbnb, other companies too, but at Airbnb, we play a big role in civic infrastructure and helping cities and towns to do the things they want to do and helping people make a little extra money with their number one asset.
Absolutely. Speaking of assets, let's maybe change gears here and talk a little bit about sort of like the modern side of sort of like our topic, right? So to think about the operations from where they are right now, where they're going, you know, needless to say, obviously the last year, and you can say the last 2 years, but definitely the last year, the AI and automation is everywhere. I think legal is a big part of it, but operations in general. I'm curious how you approach this in a company like Airbnb, but also again, kind of, you know, rely a little bit on your past too. And how do you think government and the public sector, again, that's another thing I'm trying to like uncover with this, always this feeling that public sector is always slower than the private sector. And again, I always think that's a too much of a broad statement, right? And it's,
that's always right. I think that AI has a big role to play, obviously, in our economy. Government has an important role to play in making sure that AI is deployed in a way that consistent with our social norms. And at Airbnb, we think about AI two ways in our legal department. One, we're giving legal advice about our company's use of AI to make sure it's appropriate, consistent with European regulations. We're a big company in Europe and in regulations in the United States, of course, also. And we also deploy it as part of our tools in the legal department. We deploy it in two ways in our legal department. One, we're using it for knowledge management in our legal department. You know, we have a big legal department. A lot of people have been there for a while, but a lot of people are new. And so they don't necessarily know about all the things we've done in the past and whatnot. And so AI is very, very helpful in us sorting all of our files and giving everyone access to, hey, we've done a memo on that before, or hey, we've written a paper on that before, whatnot. And so I think AI is going to be increasingly a big part of law practice. There'll always still be a role for lawyers who, you know, do some of the creative work and the thinking and the storytelling. But I think that more and more, just as knowledge management tools have revolutionized law practice for a number of years now, AI and different kinds of large language models can be very important in that too.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
You know, I always thought about a lot of the traditional quote unquote, and I don't love that word back office, but like sort of like the back office department, to me was always there's the work you're doing the day to day, and then the role you're playing as a trusted advisor for the business, right? And I feel like that's kind of where we see more of that, kind of where the AI goes in. Do you feel that, and by the way, even your move from being a chief of staff to the president and then being a CLO in Airbnb, to me, actually play on that exact path where you really, when you company like Airbnb, you need the ownership and advisory that comes with that role more than necessarily, including that too, but more than necessarily the day-to-day, like you said, kind of reviewing certain litigation. How do you sort of like, when you talk to your teams, when you kind of think about hiring, you know, you grow the team, how do you guys hire for that, knowing that sort of like now you have different tools and whatever you have today, in a year it will be even kind of like more higher quality and so on. How do you kind of go about that? I'm just curious, obviously, with such a fast-pacing company like Airbnb.
Well, obviously, we hire people who have domain expertise. We're a big payments company. We're one of the first companies in the internet to process its own payments. Way back in the starting days of Airbnb. So payments is a big part of our business. We're people, we have more than 30 forms of payment that are used on the platform around the world, different local forms of payment. So we have a bunch of payments lawyers. Privacy is a big topic for us. We need to protect our guests' information and also try to customize and personalize the experience. And so we have a bunch of privacy lawyers also. We have product lawyers, of course, because we're constantly innovating on the product. We have IP lawyers, we have all kinds of lawyers, and then we have country councils in dozens of countries around the world. I have 30 lawyers who work for me in Singapore. We have 30 lawyers who work for us in Europe, and 30 lawyers who work for us in Sao Paulo. And so we have lawyers all over the world making sure that our product is consistent with local law and local regulations. We need people who know their stuff substantively, but I also need people who can work in a largely virtual organization. We do have offices in places around the world, but by and large, Airbnb is a live anywhere, work anywhere company. I'm based in Washington, D.C. I come out to San Francisco 1 week a month, but most of my time I spend in Washington, the Washington, D.C. area. I travel and visit our lawyers around the world too, but we need lawyers who can work remotely and who know are specialists in their domain and geographies. And so you need people who have all those kinds of expertise, and then you need people who can work together effectively in a very cross-functional organization, because of course, most of what we do is give advice to our business partners and the different parts of the company. We need people who can work well with the business units.
How was that, by the way, personally, as a change? I'm assuming it was a big change to kind of move to a remote environment, like you said, like truly remote.
Big change. You know, I used to leave my house early in the morning to go to the White House and stay there till late at night, but now I mostly work from home. So it is a big change. It's a lot less social, a lot less. It's just sometimes it feels a little bit lonely, but I try to get out on the road, see my lawyers around the country, see them around the world, get out to San Francisco, spend time with the senior team there. So it's definitely different, but I love working at Airbnb. I love what we do as a company, and I love my legal team. We have brilliant lawyers working hard all around the world, and they're doing a great job.
Awesome. It's a big change, but there's obviously a lot of pros to it, but it's definitely different. When we think about operating, I guess, I do want to kind of push a little bit on trying to find that one thing that you can say, like after going back again to the enterprise, the private sector, it's like one thing that comes up to you and be like, man, I wish we had that in the public sector too, or I wish we embraced that way of working or that technology, or just sort of like a mentality that you feel like is missing from the public sector, or the opposite too, right? It's like where you come into the private sector and be like, man, this is nice, but I actually liked how we did it in the public sector before.
Well, I'd say it goes both ways. I'd say one thing great about Airbnb is our co-founder, is our CEO, Brian Chesky, is an amazing leader, and he's the decider. And so there's no question about who makes the decisions, whereas in government, often you have to get Congress to approve, and you have to get the White House to approve, and just the decision-making is much more diffuse, more complicated. So at Airbnb, we have an executive team meeting every Monday with Brian. And a lot of the complicated issues are aired out there, and you get decisions, and they're final and they're clear. And so that kind of accountability and line of control is something you have in the private sector you don't have in the public sector, for some good reasons too. You know, we're a very diverse society. Power should be diffuse. There should be checks and balances. And that's a part of government that can be frustrating at times, but is who we are as a country and who we are as a nation. And there are times when you're like, oh my God, we can't get this bill passed in Congress. Why is it so hard? Why can't we get this done? Why can't we get these people to vote this way? And so on and so forth. But there's good things about that too, but it can be frustrating and time consuming and take a longer time to get a decision. And what I miss from the public sector is we had really unbelievable information. Obviously, in the White House, you get the best intelligence in the world. And so you knew what was going on at all times, all over the world. And obviously, you don't have that same kind of access to intelligence and information in the private sector. So that's a little bit, can be frustrating sometimes. But I've enjoyed my service in both parts of the economy. And they're different, and they should be different. And there's things each can teach the other. And so I've enjoyed that.
I love that. I think it's such a good visualization of sometimes the frustration. I think people outside of it, on both sides, like people outside of big companies or people outside of the government are not fully understanding why are things working the same way. And I like the way you describe it. It's actually the two sides of the same pillar, right? Like you want to separate the control. It's gonna affect the operationality of it. And then you can do things in the business, but at the same time. So anyway, I love that. Well, I know we have a shorter time today, but I want to go back to you on a personal level a little bit. And you went through that diverse career and got as high as you can get really in the United States. What is this, maybe an advice that you got early in your career to carry with you on a personal level that you tell your kids that that it's worth paying forward?
Well, one thing I always tell young people is to focus on your peer network. People get very obsessed with mentors. And mentors have been helpful to me in my career, and I'm grateful for my mentors. But much more important in my career has been the peers, because I think your peers are the people who ride with you for your whole career. So I'm at an age and stage in my career now where most of my mentors, sadly, are gone. They can't be that helpful to me because a lot of them have passed away or retired. But the people who were young people with me in my career are still around, and they're very important to me. And so I encourage people to really focus on your peer network even more than the mentorship, because the peers are the people who are going to ride with you the whole journey. And having strong peer relationships, that employers are going to ask about you. They're going to say to your peers, hey, what is this person like to work with? And those are the people who are going to know the opportunities for you, because they're the people who are going to be at the same age and stage you're at. So they're going to know the opportunities for you. And so I really encourage people not just to look up at mentors, but look at your peers at every stage of your career. Be a good peer, help people along, bring people along, bring talented colleagues along, be inclusive. I think, inclusiveness is really important. I was really proud when I was White House Chief of Staff. It was the first time ever the senior staff of White House was majority female, and the very senior staff was majority female. I thought that kind of inclusiveness made us a stronger team. We got the best talent around the table. And I try to do the same thing at Airbnb. I think it's very important to be focused on your peers, focused on inclusion, not just focused on your mentors. So that's the advice I give people, young people all the time.
I love it. I think it's the first time I've heard that, and I could not agree more. You can learn from anyone, but really the one that the people around you also that kind of went through with you through the ranks, they have a lot of different point of views that you can learn from and interact with. Ron, thank you so much again. This was great. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.